The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
Thank you so much for coming. And was there anyone here that was at my session this morning about engaging culture? A couple of you, great. A few of you, well, awesome. Thank you for coming back. I appreciate it. I know there's lots of great education to get over this weekend. I just sat in the finance course that he had some great tips for teaching our kids about finances and taxing our kids. I love that when he talked about taxing our kids. Like, that is a plan I can become a part of. My name is Jason, and this is my family here. My beautiful wife, Allison, who is pregnant with our 10th baby. She is walking around. She's sitting in the back there. She's due in about 3 or 4 weeks, so we are hoping nothing happens during the next session here, and we've got a few more weeks to go. But we live in Estevan, Saskatchewan, which is about 2 hours north of... Sorry, is this better? Is he in there adjusting things? I should have been holding this closer, so I'll try to work with him. We live in Estevan, Saskatchewan, a couple hours south of Regina. And I have just started a podcast and a YouTube channel with my friend Ryan. About a year or so ago, we were making a list of friends and acquaintances that were men we knew whose marriages were falling apart. They were getting separated and divorced. And a lot of these guys were succeeding at work and succeeding in their careers and running their companies, but failing at home. And we just kind of talked about it. Hey, is there anything we could do maybe to produce some good content and encourage dads to put in effort at home? You know, in the most important organization that you're a part of, which is your family. So we put together a podcast and a YouTube channel called The Life Guards Show. We're helping men guard their lives and thrive at home and at work. So you can check that out at that QR code. I'll put that back up again at the end. And I've also just written a book that is about to be released. It is not released yet. It is called Riders of the Lost Reptiles, Danger in the Jungle. This is like the Hardy Boys meet Jurassic Park meet Indiana Jones. So my boys like it, and that's really all the, you know, that works for me. If my boys like it and they want me to read it again, then I'm happy about that. It's targeted towards 8 to 12-year-old boys. Is there anyone here that has four boys under the age of 12? Okay. Five? Five boys under the age of 12? Is that really? Four. Okay. Who is up here? Someone up here put their hand up for four. Here, you can take this. I'm kind of on a leash, so there you go. Okay, if people can move in and squish in. We have some standing at the back. I see two seats up here. I got a two. Anybody give me two. I got two seats right here. I got three up here. Give me three. Let me see a three. Right here, right three. They're ones and twos, but if people squish together, we'll get a four, maybe a five, and you can get right in here. So I'm doing this workshop. We're talking about how homeschool dads can support our homeschooling wives and what we can do to encourage and love our wives. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be doing a session about pornography and purity and how we can navigate this with our sons. We live in a culture that is increasingly sending messages to our kids that are not helpful. And in this area of life, it is destroying families, marriages, society. And so we're going to talk about that tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. That is going to be down on the second floor in the racetrack viewing area there. So we'd love to see you there bright and early at that session. How can we as homeschooling dads support our wives? There are actually statistics about this out there. These are actual stats. It's just from the National Home Education Research Institute. And I don't think any of us are going to be shocked by these statistics, but they say that 88% of home education is performed by mom. And they say 10% of homeschool instruction comes from dads. Now, I don't teach math and I don't claim to be a mathematician, but when I add those numbers together, I get 88 plus 10 is 98. And that leaves 2% of education happening somewhere. I don't know who's teaching that 2%, if it's YouTube or if it's the other kids One of my kids, when I was, they saw me making this slide, they're like, God is teaching the other 2%. I'm like, okay, man, that works for me. If it works for you, it works for me. If you were to ask yourself, how can you support your wife, you probably could come up with some answers for yourself, correct? There may be some ideas going through your head. I want you to think about that. I'm going to give you a few like really practical ideas in the next 45 minutes of how you can do that. But you probably can determine a few ideas on your own. So we asked on our podcast, we had a father of 11, and we asked him, what is your best parenting tip that you would give to new dads or to people becoming fathers? And I want you to hear what he said.
One of the most important things that I would say is, and I just did a parenting series, would be, it has nothing to do with parenting, but the most important thing that I could convey to any set of parents is to make sure that you pursue your relationship with your spouse. That is, outside of your relationship with the Lord, that is the most important relationship in your house. You need to have date nights. You need to spend time with each other. You need to sit on the couch in the afternoon. We've done this series before in our past where they emphasize couch time. So yeah. I come home from work and we normally are overwhelmed with kids and we kind of turn all of our attention there. But the most important relationship is with your spouse, whether it be your wife or your husband.
He said, when I get home from work, I get overwhelmed with all the kids. Does that happen to anyone else here? You come home and they're like all around you and swarming you and you look through the crowd and you see your beautiful wife up there out in somewhere and you're like, remember me? And she remembers you, but she's doing some things. But, you know, one of the most important things we can do is to love our wives. And we are going to spend the next 40 minutes talking about how can we love our wives. And one way we could do that is by sacrificing. And all of us would probably agree if we had to take a bullet for our wife, we would take a bullet for our wife. We would make the ultimate sacrifice, wouldn't we? Now, I suggest that probably a very few of us are going to have to take a bullet for our wives. Probably none of us actually will ever have to do that. Maybe we will. But what all of us will get to do is every single day make tiny, small sacrifices for our wife. Not the ultimate sacrifice, but small sacrifices that are inconvenient, that you maybe don't want to do, small daily sacrifices. Choosing to help put the kids to bed instead of sitting on the couch and watching the hockey game. Choosing to help peel carrots before dinner instead of sitting in a chair and flipping through a magazine or reading a book, watching TV. Choosing to stop playing hockey or softball or volunteering at the church or doing something so that you can be home with your wife. I remember when we had, I think it was when we had our fifth, and I was a youth leader at our church. I was playing softball, and in the winter I was playing hockey. And at that point, I don't remember if we actually had a conversation or not, but we discussed it a little bit, I think, and it was like, you know, hon, you need to be home Friday night, not out at youth. You need to be home Tuesday night, not out at baseball. And so I quit playing sports, and it was a, you know, to call it a sacrifice is actually not accurate. It wasn't much of a sacrifice, but as dads, there are small things that we can do, little sacrifices to make to help support our wives. Did anyone here go to wife school, like to learn how to treat your wife? Great. I didn't go either because there is no such thing as wife school to train husbands how to treat their wives. Where do we learn how to treat our wives? Usually it's from mom and dad, from our parents. And some of us have learned healthy things from our parents on how to treat our wives. And some of us have learned unhealthy things from our parents. A friend of ours, so the wife was talking to us. We were having a conversation about our parents and what we learned from our parents. And she told us that she said to her husband, so the wife said to her husband, if you treat me the same way that your dad treats your mom, this is going to be a very short marriage. And she's a very direct person, but she recognized that the way that his dad treated his mom perhaps was going to be the way that he was going to treat her. and she was not going to stand for it. So she told him straight out, and they're still married today, probably like 20 years by now. And so it's working out. I guess he's treating her different than his dad treated his mom. Have any of you heard of this book here called The Five Love Languages? Have any of you husbands read this book called The Five Love Languages? Yes, yes, I see some hands. We're going to talk a little bit more about the five love languages in a few minutes, but I'm going to read a quote out of this book here from Dr. Gary Chapman. There's like a dozen chairs still up at the front here if anyone wants to come on down and sit at the front. In this book, Gary Chapman says that encouragement requires empathy and seeing the world from your spouse's perspective. We must learn what is important to our spouse. Now, he doesn't say many things in this quote. He says two things, and there's really only two things I have a problem with in this quote. The first thing I have a problem with is empathy, and the second thing I have a problem with is seeing the world from my spouse's perspective. Everything else in here, I can do pretty good. My question for you, men, is, are you showing empathy to your wife, and are you trying to see the world from your wife's perspective? I heard a lot of, yes, I am, a lot of that coming out of there. Does anyone even know what empathy is? Let's see, what is empathy? Empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. Similar to the previous slide, there's only two difficulties I find on this in this description of empathy. I find it difficult to understand my wife, and I find it difficult to share the feelings of my wife. Besides that, I'm on board for everything else. Most men I know are not naturally empathetic. If you think, I don't know if this happens in your house when little Tommy falls off his bike and scrapes his knee, mom will very often cuddle Tommy and comfort him, and that's good. And dad will often say, suck it up, Tommy, and get back on your bike. Suck it up, buttercup, let's keep going here. Get on and try again. Moms are very good at being empathetic, sharing the feelings of another. Dads are not always so good at this. But we can get better, we can grow, and we can learn. There's a few things here that can help us understand our wives and understand our wife's feeling. And one of those things is listening to what she says. I am not a very good listener. I will acknowledge that. My wife is a very good listener. So I had to find, you know, how can I become a good listener? So I'm going to give you a couple tips here on how to listen. This also comes from the five love languages from Dr. Gary Chapman. I see all the men with their phones out taking pictures of this slide so they can learn how to listen. Maintain eye contact with your wife. There we go. I see that phone. Maintain eye contact. Don't listen to your wife and do something else at the same time. True story, on Tuesday night, I was putting these slides together, sitting at the island in our kitchen, this exact slide, and my wife is talking to me on the other side of the island. And she's talking about something, because I can hear her voice. And she's saying words, and I'm like working on my slides, and I'm like, don't listen to your wife. And then I'm like, don't, no, yes, dear. And I looked over and she was like, you should be listening to me and not being distracted by your computer, by your television, by your Winnipeg Jets game, by your phone. Are we not walking around our houses with our phones these days and doing this and being distracted? Don't listen to your wife and do something else at the same time. Listen for the feelings. Is my wife feeling right now? And if you don't know what she's feeling, you can ask this simple question, how are you feeling? And she will sometimes give you the answer to that question. And then I don't want you to stop there. When she tells you how she's feeling, you can say, I'll role play this. How are you feeling, honey? I'm feeling sad because the kids dumped all the spaghetti on the floor that I spent all afternoon making. And then I would say to her, I think what you're saying is you're feeling sad because the kids dumped all the spaghetti on the floor that you just made? And she'll look at me and say, you really understand what I'm feeling, don't you? You are empathetic and understanding, and you are a wonderful husband. So that's an example of listening for feelings and then asking her, am I reading what you're sending me here? Are you sending me this message? So you can ask her how she's feeling and then repeat back to her how she's feeling. You ever talk to your wife and she's got clenched fists? Like, she might, how are you doing, honey? I'm doing fine. I've been homeschooling these 9 kids all day. I'm just doing fine. Her body language is sending me a different message than her words are. So we can observe our wife's body language and see, you know, hints as to how they're feeling. Darting eye. When someone's talking to you and they're darting their eyes everywhere, maybe they're nervous, they're unsure, they're hiding something. Our body language says things, and so we can try to interpret our wife's body language. This last one is also difficult for me. I read, I don't know if it was in the 5 love languages, but the statistic is, on average, we listen for 17 seconds before we feel the need to interrupt someone. Men may be worse at that than women, I don't know, but refuse to interrupt. Refrain from defending yourself, or maybe you knocked the spaghetti on the floor. You don't need to defend yourself. Just, hun, you know, I understand the spaghetti is on the floor, and I also feel sad with you for the spaghetti. Now, let's get the kids to clean up the spaghetti. Don't accuse. Don't state your position. Don't try to cover the facts. Just be there with her and understand. Now, is there anyone here who grew up in the 90s and listened to DC Talk? Was DC Talk, Decent Christian Talk, is what that stood for. On this album from like 1992, I'm gonna say, or 93, they had a song on, the first song on the album, I think, was called Love is a Verb. And all the homeschooling parents are saying, that's not how you spell love. But these guys were cool, so they spelled love L-U-V. The point of the story is that love is an action. We need to take action. We need to express our love with actions. And when we get into the love languages, we're going to really find out some actions of how we can show our wives love. They say in the average marriage that the like in love romantic feelings last for about 2 years. So if I don't know if you think back to your early marriage, you know, you have your honeymoon, you're very in love. You don't have kids dumping spaghetti on the floor yet. You are very in love. And they say that lasts for about 2 years. I think most of us would like to be married for longer than 2 years. And so how do we keep going when those loving feelings are gone? Well, one way that we can do that is to refill each other's love tanks. This is a concept that comes out of the 5 love languages as well. And as we get older, as we our bodies change, our wives' bodies change. I met with a marriage counselor when I was preparing for this talk, and he said to me, you know, God has created that we will continue to be attracted to our spouses even as they get older and wrinklier and grayer. And this kind of links to my talk about pornography tomorrow morning, because that would be something that fights against the natural. God has made it that we can continue to be attracted to our spouses as we get older. And one way to do that is to fill up each other's love tanks. Has anyone here ever had this happen to you? You run out of gas on the side of the road. Surely I'm not the only one that, man. I don't think there was one woman that raised her hand. And that's, you can keep your hands down. I've run out of gas a couple times. I remember I was carpooling. I was very nice in college. I was carpooling with another guy, so he was getting a ride with me. And he had to get home from school to get to work. And I was like, you know what? We're just going to go. We'll get to the next exit, and I'm going to get off, and we're going to fill up the tank because the tank is empty. And we got about halfway to that next exit, and we stalled on the side of the road in the middle of the winter. And I was like, you know what, man? You wait right here. I'm going to go walk a mile to that farmhouse over there through the snow, and we'll get some gas. And I called my wife, my fiance at the time. I was like, hey, hon, what are you doing? I'm stranded on the side of the road here out of gas. can you please bring me some gas? My buddy has to get to work. He's now going to be late to work. It's like, I'm sorry. Running out of gas is not fun. The analogy here is if our wives' love tanks get empty, that is also not fun. So how do we fill up our wives' love tanks? We do that by expressing love to them in a way that they understand. And the whole concept of the five love languages is that we sometimes speak different languages than our spouse when it comes to how we express love. If your wife speaks Italian and you don't speak Italian, it's very difficult probably for you to communicate with your wife. If your wife speaks French and you only speak English, it's probably very difficult. If your wife speaks a different love language to you than you do, if your wife speaks a different love language than you do, that can be very difficult. And we're going to talk about what those love languages are in a minute here. But God has created marriage to bring intimacy and love. Let's look at this quote. At the heart of mankind's existence is the desire to be intimate and to be loved by another. Marriage is designed to meet that need for intimacy and love. God designed marriage that in such a way that we can meet our wives' needs for intimacy and love, and they can meet our needs for intimacy and love. He set up a very good system for this to work. But if we don't plug into the system is going to fall apart. You know, sometimes we have a hard time expressing what we need from our wives. I have perhaps in the past said things like, she doesn't have time for me. She always prioritizes the kids over me. At the end of the day, she's too tired and has no energy left for me. These are actual real things I have said to my wife. And she has looked at me and said, stop acting like a baby. And I say to her, hun, I'm not acting like a baby. This is just how I feel right now. But part of that is because we are speaking different love languages. One thing, you know, when we're communicating with our wives, there's one thing about the way we say things, and then there's another thing about the actual words that we're saying. So even though we may be presenting the facts to our wife, if we're presenting the facts in an angry way that hurts our wife, and we have lost. Even if all the facts are on our side, if we're not communicating it in a loving way, in a way that our wife can understand, we are going to be losing that argument. We are not going to be filling up her love tank. When my wife was pregnant with she's been pregnant most of our married life, but on one of those occasions near the beginning, she was pregnant, I believe, with number two. And I don't know if your wives do this or not, but the decorating and the furniture in the house sometimes is not good enough for the next baby. So you need to move decorations and things and furniture so that the next baby will live in a good home. So we were in the baby's room and we were moving beds. Like the bed was here, then we moved it over here. Then she thought it should go back where it already was. And I thought that was a good spot, but she disagreed. And I'm moving furniture around. And then I said something to her that I shouldn't have said to her. I said, hon, why do you have to be so finicky about this stuff? And she didn't appreciate that. And so she clenched her hand into a fist and then brought it back and hit me in the arm. And that was the only time that she did that. But the lesson I learned was that we have to be careful what we say to our wives. And we sometimes need to, it's okay to think it, but maybe I shouldn't say it. And so the lesson was be careful how we communicate with our wives and what we say to our wives. Did anyone watch the online conference that Matches did a few years ago where Todd Wilson spoke? He spoke when, I think it was like right at the beginning of COVID, and Todd Wilson was supposed to speak. And he wrote this book called Lies Homeschooling Moms Believe. This is a fantastic book. I don't know if anyone here has it. I have seen some of his books out here. But it's Learning to Live the Truth, the Whole Truth, and Nothing But the Truth. Lies Homeschooling Moms Believe is the title of the book. And I want to just show you the nine lies that he talks about in this book. The nine lies that homeschooling moms believe. The first lie is that everyone else's kids are better. When we look at the well-behaved children in our homeschool groups and we see our children that are still wearing their pajamas and they've been wearing them for days or weeks perhaps, We compare ourselves to these families and say, everyone else's kids are better. Everyone else's home is cleaner. Everyone else makes better meals. Everyone else is more disciplined and more spiritual. They read their Bibles. Their husbands are praying all day long for them, and they're having wonderful devotional times together as a family. We don't ever do that. Everyone else's marriage is better. They go on cruises. I looked at their Instagram pictures. They were in Costa Rica and they were in Mexico, and they just renovated their kitchen and they have beautiful new countertops. Everyone else's marriage is better because their lives on social media are exact, true representations of everything that happens to them. Not. Every other mom loves homeschooling. You know, other moms struggle with homeschooling too. So just know that. Everyone else is more capable, and I'm the only one falling apart and feeling this way. Comparing ourselves to others is not helpful. You know, in the Bible, Jesus never condemned. He never was comparing people with other people. There's a story in the New Testament where Jesus, they bring to him the woman caught in adultery, and they wanted Jesus to condemn her and point the finger at her and say how bad she is. Jesus does not condemn. God is not condemning and saying you should be this way, you should be that way. Jesus is loving. He is loving. He's not getting us to compare ourselves to the other families, to the other people. When we compare ourselves to other people, it is just not helpful. Our family's been listening to the Chronicles of Narnia audiobooks. Has anyone read the Chronicles of Narnia? Oh, I see some. And or listened to the Chronicles of Narnia? Yes? What's your favorite one? The Last Battle with the ape. I don't like that ape. He's a bad guy. Well, so you guys will probably remember this from the story. When people ask Aslan, so if you haven't read the Chronicles of Narnia, Aslan is the representative of Jesus in the analogy of the story. And people will sometimes ask Aslan, well, how come this person got this? Or why is this person this way? Or comparing themselves to other people's story. And Aslan says, child, I am telling you your story, not hers. No one is told any story but their own. Don't compare yourselves to other families. The picture-perfect family, I showed a picture of our family at the beginning here. Here's the truth behind that picture. We're all happy and smiling there, but about 5 minutes earlier, our four-year-old had been running down the gravel road, and he did a face plant right into the gravel, right, and landed right on his nose. So he was screaming his head off like 5 minutes before this picture was taken. And we're like, okay, man, well, I was like, suck it up, buttercup, let's go, suck it up, we're gonna go to the picture. Mummy was comforting him and everything, but the fact is we smiled for a moment, but there was a lot of chaos going on in that beautiful homeschooling family picture right there. This is a comic out of one of Todd Wilson's books, The Unrealistic World of Homeschooler Envy. You probably can't read it at the back, but standing next to her own son, who hadn't changed his underwear in 6 days, Marcy looked at Betty's 8 children, who all played the violin, were fluent in 3 languages, and always answered, yes, mother. And Betty wished that she hadn't been seen. I'm sure the perfect homeschooling family also has problems, and they are not all as perfect as we think they are. So if our wives are believing some of these lies, how do we combat lies? We combat lies with truths. The truths, honey, you are not alone. You've got me. They have us to help them, right, dads? Other moms feel the same. Homeschooling moms go through all kinds of pressure. It is a busy, busy life and very difficult at times. Just know that you are not alone. This second one I really like because I thought about it. You know, God has given your children exactly the father and the mother that they need. We can make a lot of decisions in our lives. We can choose what school to go to. We can choose where to live. We can choose what car to buy. We can choose what career we're going to go. If we don't like it, we can do something different. One thing that we can't choose is who our children are. Now, fostering and adoption is an exception to that rule, but God has given you the exact children for you, that you and your wife have come together and made these children, and only you, out of 8 billion people on the planet, can be the mom and dad for these children. God has set it up, so you have what it takes to make that a good situation. And our children are going to become exactly, number three, what God created them to be. In his book, Todd Wilson talks about seeds, and we've got lots of farmers here. You know, if you plant a soybean seed, it doesn't grow into corn. If you plant a carrot seed, it doesn't grow into an apple tree. The seeds grow into what they were created to be. And our children are going to become exactly who God created them to be. And he says this quote in the book. He says, "Your children will become exactly what God creates them to be, not because of your efforts, but in spite of your efforts." You know, we're not perfect. We all make mistakes. God is still going to help our kids figure out where they need to be. You can't do it all. You know, the homeschool family that they all play violin and they all speak Latin and the moms all grow their own organic grain and bake their own bread and grind their own wheat. You know, you don't have to be the baking mom or the music mom or the mom that makes crafts and puts them on Pinterest and they're like beautiful works of art that should be displayed in museums. It's okay if your kids are just like writing on the walls with crayons. That is art. Writing on the wall is art. Support that. You don't have to be the crafty mom. You can't do it all. And those perfect homeschooling families are not real. So I was driving with my 16-year-old daughter the other day, who is in the midst of getting her driver's license, etc. And I thought we were just having like a nice conversation and talking about what the next step is. And then she just starts bawling and crying her eyes out. And I don't know what I've said or what I've done wrong for my daughter here. She's crying and I'm just like, I'm just gonna look out the window and I'm gonna let you cry, dear. And we're driving down the road. You know, we make our kids cry sometimes, and that's okay. Those perfect homeschooling families are not real. We all make mistakes. We all do things wrong and we all have problems. Moms, you're doing a great job. Whatever you're doing, you're intentionally homeschooling your children. You're discipling them. You're teaching them. You're training them. You're doing a great job. Men, we have to remind our wives about these truths because sometimes they will forget. And sometimes they've got other stresses that are interfering with their lives and making them feel the way they feel. And we know how they're feeling because we ask them and we listen to them and we look them in the eye and ask how they're feeling. Maybe they're feeling stressed out because of money. Maybe you can help just by having a conversation about money. Maybe that won't help, having a conversation about money. I don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Money could be something. Is your wife, does she have conflict with her friends? Does she have conflict with her family, with the in-laws and the outlaws? I've had a couple conversations with people who, they were friends and there were situations that were making my wife upset and I called them up. Actually, I think I talked to them in person and had a conversation with them to try and help my wife not have to carry the stress of some of this drama. And sometimes as husbands, we have to help get involved in what's going on with our wives and their families and their relationships. Health, you know, there are lots of health things that that occur in lives and in families. We have a family friend of ours that the wife, they have a couple kids. The wife has just been diagnosed with cancer. There are health issues that go on that sometimes are causing stress. Outside pressures from others. You know, sometimes parents, like grandparents, like in-laws, they say things that aren't always helpful. I don't know if that's happened to any of you where your in-laws or your wife's in-laws, which would be your parents, has said something not helpful. But I'm not going to name names here, but we had a family member. Our oldest has graduated, and she's gone away to school, to a worship school right now. And she sent out like an update email to her family and friends and stuff. And then one of the family members contacted us and said, "You know what? Your daughter has terrible grammar in her emails." And this person doesn't have very good grammar at all anyways. And I was like, why are you critiquing our daughter's grammar in her informal emails to you? But our wives are getting pressure from other people and other family members sometimes. How can we help alleviate the pressure? Talk to some of those family members and help alleviate some of that pressure. Schedule. I already talked about this a little bit, but stopping playing sports, some of those things. We get a lot of pressure for our kids to play organized sports. We are just about to have 10 kids here. There are not enough nights in the week for all of our kids to play an organized sport. There are 7 nights. There are not enough nights for our kids to play sports. And I've had conversations with people like, we just don't play sports because we don't have time. or money perhaps to do that. So we did try to find things that we could do together. So we found a soccer group, a soccer league in our town, and all the kids play on one night. So the whole family would go up, all the kids would play, we'd do soccer for a night, and we all go home, and it's great. We're not out every night of the week. We also, has anyone here heard of Awana? It's like a children's program in churches. Maybe some of your churches run Awana. We love Awana. One night a week, the whole family gets up. We all go to Awana. The older kids are leaders. The younger kids are involved in the program. I volunteered as a leader one year. You know, our whole family could get involved in that. It was one night, and it helped alleviate some of our scheduling difficulties. We found a piano teacher that could come to our house and do lessons there so we don't have to leave. All the kids get done in a couple hours. And trying to find solutions that will help alleviate some of the scheduling problems. Do you ever apologize to your wife? You know, sometimes we make mistakes. And I remember growing up, my dad was very good at apologizing. I don't know if that was because he made a lot of mistakes or he just kind of got used to apologizing. But that can be very meaningful to our wives to apologize if we do something wrong. I maybe make a lot of mistakes too because I feel like every few months I need to call some family member and apologize. 2 weeks ago we were out for lunch with my brother and sister-in-law and some nieces and nephews, and my wife said to me, "I think you embarrassed our niece. She had just got a tattoo." And I'm like, "What? They just came out of left field. She's a good kid." And I'm like, so then I was grilling her about the tattoo. She was standing up in the restaurant. There's all these people around. I was like, "Why in the world did you get a tattoo?" And anyways, my wife said, "Perhaps you embarrassed our niece by making her stand up in the restaurant and defend herself for getting a tattoo." I'm like, all right. So called my niece up. I'm like, "Hey, it's Uncle Jay. Dear old Uncle Jay. I just want to apologize for, you know, calling you out in front of a restaurant full of people." So do we apologize? Apology is a helpful thing sometimes when we're communicating with our wives or our nieces. When we're talking to our sons about communicating, one term we use in our house, or one phrase my friend Alex says, is our strength is for service. So are we using our strength for service to serve our families, to serve our wives, to serve our children? The other day, our five-year-old used his strength. You know those big exercise balls that are like very big, and when your wife is pregnant, she likes to sit on the exercise ball. I guess it's more comfortable. Well, our kids also like to sit on the exercise balls. And the other day, one of our 8-year-old girls was sitting on the exercise ball, and our 5-year-old son thought it would be a great idea to run up as fast as he could and kick the exercise ball out from beneath his sister. And his sister didn't like that, believe it or not. And in our follow-up conversation, I was talking to my boys, and I'm like, "Boys, our strength is for service. Our strength is not to kick the exercise balls out from beneath our sisters. Use our strength for service." Men want to be fixers. Little comic I found here, little meme. You know, there's water rising up in the kitchen. It's just a small leak, they said. Everything's fine, they said. And the kitchen's filling up with water. Men want to fix problems. Probably in your job, you have to deal with fixing problems day to day. We've got some hydro workers here, I think, correct? Those are big problems if people can't get their power. You want to make sure that the power is running, right? I worked in building lots of conveyors for carrot plants. And, you know, if we had carrots falling on the ground in between conveyors, our job was to find solutions for that. Maybe move the conveyors closer. Maybe extend the chute a little bit longer. Maybe add belting. Our wives are not broken sinks, and our wives are not conveyors. Our wives don't always need to hear from us how to fix them. They sometimes just want us to be empathetic, to understand how they're feeling, and not try to fix them, not try to solve the problem, to listen to them, to understand, and to use our words to bring life and to use our words to encourage and love our wives. All right, let's hop into the love languages here and talk about the love languages. The object of love is not getting something that you want, but doing something for the well-being of the one that you love. Not doing things for selfish reasons, doing things for the one that you love. And so this is not taking a bullet necessarily, but it's doing small daily sacrifices to love our wives. My co-host on the podcast, Ryan, was talking about this one day. I'm going to show you this little clip from Ryan about how he struggles with being unselfish and loving his wife.
It's not my natural thing to figure out the best ways that I can serve her and lay my life down for her and sacrifice. And I have to like be intentional to think through that. Like, don't be selfish, Ryan. Don't be selfish. Don't be selfish. Don't be selfish. Like, think about her. Think about her. Think about her. What about her?
And that's what we have to often remind ourselves. Don't be selfish. Don't be selfish. Don't be selfish. Don't be selfish. Think about her. Think about her. Think about her. That quote we just saw, the object of love is not getting something you want, but doing something for the well-being of the one that you love. Filling up her love tank. All right, I'm going to go to the five love languages. Does anyone know what any of the love languages are? If you know, just shout them out if you know what they are. Gifts is one. Acts of service. Quality time. Physical touch. Words of affirmation. That's five. I think we nailed them. Very good. Words of affirmation, acts of service, receiving gifts, quality time, and physical touch. What are these things? Words of affirmation. He says in the five love languages that one way to express love is to use words that build up. Mark Twain said, I can live for 2 months on a good compliment. Our words can bring life to our wives when we are encouraging them and using words to build them up. Proverbs 16, verse 24 says that pleasant words are sweet and healthy. And like I said before, our words and the tone of our words can communicate things to our wives. The second one, let's look at that a little bit more. Words of affirmation. So how do we communicate? Here's some tips of what to do, things not to do, and like some actual actions you can do. So if your wife's love language is words of affirmation, speak encouraging, positive words, empathize again, listen actively, those things keep coming up. That's how you communicate words of affirmation. Things you can do, send her a note, send her a text, jot a note when you leave for work in the morning, say, hey, I'm thinking about you, and encourage her often. Things not to do. Don't tell her that she's finicky. Don't just move the furniture. Move the furniture and don't say anything about being finicky. Don't bring non-constructive criticism. And make sure you appreciate her efforts. So that's words of affirmation. The next one, physical touch. A physical touch is a powerful vehicle for communicating marital love. You know, and things like holding hands, kissing, embracing, all these things that are just like non-sexual, physical manifestations of your love for your wife. She may appreciate that if her love language is physical love, physical touch. Can you pat her on the back when you walk by? Can you give her a hug unexpectedly? Can you hold hands while you're driving down the road? These are all ways we can show physical love, physical touch to our wife. It's nonverbal, uses body language. I mentioned some of those things there. Don't neglect her physically. If that's her love language, you know, that is meaningful in a bad way if you are neglecting her, neglecting to touch her physically. Receiving gifts. They say this is like the easiest one. You know, you could literally walk out of here after the session and go buy your wife a nice piece of curriculum and say, honey, I was thinking of you. I got you some great curriculum. Bring her that gift. Receiving gifts is a great way. And a gift is always something that someone can hold. Your wife can hold this in her hand and say, look, he was thinking of me. You need to be thinking of someone to give them a gift. Now, don't do what my friend Alex did. He gave his wife a necklace, and she remembered the necklace because he had had it for a long, long time. And that's because his previous girlfriend had given him the necklace, and he had kept it somewhere, and then he gave his wife the necklace that his previous girlfriend had given him. So I don't recommend re-gifting things you got from old girlfriends. But this is an easy gift to apply. You know, you can go out and get things. Things to avoid, forgetting special occasions, birthdays, anniversaries, things like that. And it's not, you can just surprise. I don't do a lot of things right, but sometimes I will just pick up some flowers and bring them home. And it cost me like, well, my wife's sitting over there, cost me like $400 to $500 for the bouquets of flowers that I surprise her with, or more. Quality time. Quality time when you're not looking at the TV, when you're not preparing a PowerPoint presentation, when you're not on your phone. It's giving someone your undivided attention. And someone I was talking to today was talking about quantity of time leads to quality time. And this is true with our kids as well. You know, quantity of time leads to quality of time. Spending time with your wife, spending time with your kids will lead to quality of time. Many of us, like I said, we want to try and fix problems, analyze, create solutions, and we forget marriage is a relationship. It's not a project to be completed. It's not a problem to be solved. It's not a sink or a conveyor to be fixed. It is a relationship. Acts of service. This is the fifth one here, and I'm going to spend a few minutes on this because I got a whole bunch of ideas that spoke to me when I read this book. Doing things you know your spouse would like you to do. You seek to please her by serving her. You express your love for her by doing things for her. And sometimes she's been maybe asking you for days or weeks or years to do some of these acts of service, but you haven't done them yet. Use action phrases when you're talking to her like, I'll help you fix that right now. Right now we have a pile of pots on our counter, because we have a broken drawer that the bottom has fallen out of the drawer. Now, in my defense, I've already fixed the drawer once, and, well, that will speak to my woodworking skills. I have fixed the drawer once, and the drawer bottom has fallen out again, and we have a pile of pots. I could say to my wife, you know, hon, I will help get that drawer fixed again, and I will fix it better than I did last time. Doing chores together, making breakfast in bed, I don't think I've ever done that, but it's a thing I hear. You can make breakfast in bed for your wife. And things to avoid are making requests of others a higher priority, whether that is work, doing work, making your career a higher priority. It could be volunteering at your church. It could be doing good things. I play on the worship team at our church, and there's practices and things. And for a time, I stopped doing that so that I was not making, so that I would make my family a priority and not just my church. Make quality time or acts of service a quality. Here's some things you can do. Cook a meal, set a table, wash dishes, clean a toilet, and other things. Getting bugs off windshield, changing the baby's diaper, dusting the bookcase. I didn't even know there was dust on the bookcase, but I guess that's a thing. Dusting the bookcase, mowing the grass, changing the cat's litter box, washing her. There's tons of things we can do. You probably don't have to think very long to think of some things that are acts of service that you could do to show love to your wife. And it might require learning new skills. You know, I can cook some pretty mean toast, but besides that, you know, I might have to learn some skills to help out her more in the kitchen if we aren't gonna have toast for dinner. Around here, can you help her just like evaluate curriculum? Just give your opinion. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Sometimes our wives have all these decisions to make, and there's a thing called decision fatigue, when you have so many decisions to make and you just make bad decisions because you're overwhelmed by the decision making. Can you help your wife make a decision? She wanted to buy something, and I was like, you want to buy everything, like at every booth, hon. Like, we don't need to buy this. Why don't we put this away? So I helped her make the decision not to buy more curriculum. Could you help tutor your kids? Like on a Saturday morning, can you take them out to the shop and work on the car? And maybe you've got technological kids that want to learn how to do coding. Can you sit beside them on the computer and help them learn how to make a spreadsheet? Or one of my sons is learning how to do computer coding and I don't like it and I don't know about it, but sometimes I will take him and we'll look at coding books together. I don't even know what it means, but he likes to do it. So are there things that you could do that maybe lie in your interests and help with your kids, tutor them kind of in a specific area? Can you go outside? Can you take them out into the yard, help them do chores? Someone I was talking to earlier said their oldest is 7. And I said, his oldest boy is 7. I'm like, you're on the verge of your boys becoming like very productive. You're gonna once they get past seven, you've got lawnmowers there, you've got people that can swing a hammer, you've got lots of practical tools. It was you, that's who we were talking about. We were talking about your boys, like, you're so close. You got all these little kids, but it's about to get easier because as your kids grow, teach your boys how to do stuff and they'll become helpful around the house. Maybe go grocery shopping. I don't know, I really don't like shopping for groceries. Have you ever been grocery shopping? Like, it's not fun. It's just not fun. They put the stuff in all the wrong places. I was at Walmart a week ago with my two teenage daughters. They were very helpful. And we were looking for oatmeal. And, you know, I was in the frozen food section and I saw another dad. And I was like, I asked my daughters, I'm like, girls, do you know where the oatmeal is? They're like, we don't know. Like, there's a dad. I bet this guy knows where oatmeal is. So I walked up to him and was like, hey man, do you know where the oatmeal is? And he said, no, I don't know where the oatmeal is. You know, we were just two lost dads standing in the frozen food section at Walmart, not knowing where the oatmeal was. But he did have a suggestion. He said, it's maybe in the baking section, which I had already walked through looking for the oatmeal. I said, okay, I'll go look in the baking section. So I went to the baking section, looked around again for like an hour. Like, there's got to be, he said the oatmeal's here, and spotted a Walmart employee. And she was standing here, I was standing here. I said, ma'am, do you know where the oatmeal was? And she went like this. And I looked at the shelf right beside me that I'd already looked at. And there was the oatmeal. And I'm thankful for that employee. I would still be in Walmart today looking for the oatmeal if that lady hadn't been there. But maybe you could help your wife by going grocery shopping and picking up some oatmeal. What if you don't know your wife's love languages? And we're going to wrap up with this here. Here's questions you can ask to learn your wife's love language. What do you do or fail to do that hurts your wife most deeply? Because that is a clue. If there's things you do that hurt her, the opposite of that is what may probably be her love language. What has your wife most often requested of you? Does she most often request that you go grocery shopping or fix that broken drawer or give her a hug or sit on the couch and talk to her when all the kids want to have your attention? What does your wife most often request of you? That is a clue to what your wife's love language is. In what way does your wife regularly express love to you? Does she bring you bouquets of flowers? Maybe gifts is her love language. Does she bring you gifts? Maybe that's a clue to what her love language is. Does she give you hugs? Does she encourage you and speak positive words? That may be a clue to what your wife's love language is. And if you don't want to talk to your wife, you can go to my website and I will email you a link so you can send your wife the link and she can fill out the love language quiz and tell you what her love language is. And then you won't have to have the conversation. But I would encourage you to have the conversation with your wife and talk to her. We've talked about a few things here. We've talked about love languages. We talked about the lies that homeschooling moms believe. We need to remind them of these truths, that they're not alone, that God has given us the children that we need. We are the parents they need. Your children are going to become exactly what God created them to be. You can't do it all. The perfect homeschooling families are not real. And honey, you're doing a great job. Try and figure out what your wife's love language is. Is it words of affirmation? Is it acts of service? Does she need you to give her a gift? Quality time or physical touch? Dads, you've got what it takes to learn your wife's love languages, to make the small sacrifices. You maybe aren't going to have to take a bullet for her, but there's maybe small sacrifices you can make every day to love your wife. Thanks for coming out. Are there any questions or anything? Okay, and a round of applause. Thank you so much. I'll put that QR code up again. You can get the first four chapters of my book free there, and you can also get the love languages free quiz emailed to you that you can do it with your wife and learn what her love language is. So, thank you guys.